Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
Today, we are beginning our fight on a legislative level, on an administrative level, to keep New York number one.
That's New York Senator Chuck Schumer speaking yesterday at a press conference where he and Mayor Bloomberg unveiled a report that says New York is in danger of losing its vaunted status as the world's financial capital. Is the threat to New York's financial industry real, however, or is this just another effort by Wall Street to throw off the shackles of new regulation that was enacted in the wake of the Enron scandal? Joining me here this morning to take a look at the hand-wringing is Daniel Gross, who writes the Money Box column for Slate.com, and Carrie Johnson, a financial reporter for The Washington Post. Carrie, welcome to WNYC. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian.
Dan, briefly summarize this report.
McKinsey Global Institute put together a report for New York City that concludes that, you know, while the U.S. by certain numbers looks quite good when it comes to financial services, and New York in particular, that it is losing its leadership position to London and Hong Kong and Dubai and all these other places, that part of it is due to the growth of these other economies. But they're arguing that regulatory climate, general business climate in this country and in New York is hampering firms' ability to remain global leaders.
Carrie, anything to add?
I think this report is best understood as part of a tripart effort by the business community to advance reforms and roll back certain regulatory overreaches that they view as overreaches in the wake of Enron and WorldCom 5 or 6 years ago.
So you see this as a corporate special interest attack on the regulatory system rather than a cri de coeur for New York's financial health?
To be sure, most business people from both political parties would argue that the government went a little bit too far post-Enron. But one of the things that this report advances and has been advanced by other business reports, including one last December and another still to come by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in March, is that they want to revamp the American legal system. They want to make it more difficult for investors and others to sue companies and corporate managers. This is something that's been desired by the business community for years and years and years. But, of course, lobbying on those issues went nowhere after investors lost billions of dollars in 2000, 2001, 2002.
We can take phone calls. And I wonder if anybody's listening from the financial sector this morning. Maybe you're at work and listening at your desk. Maybe you're home sick. Call us up if you work in finance in New York City and you agree or disagree with the notions behind this report. Is New York City in danger of losing its financial base? After all, Wall Street is still, well, everybody thinks New York's economy is still too dependent on Wall Street. But if we are so dependent, do we have to take steps like this? And there's also a tax-free international zone proposal that we'll get to help companies, even these wealthy companies, cut back on their taxes in order to keep them in the United States, because the competition is not, according to this report, New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Washington State. The competition is Tokyo and London and Hong Kong and the like. So give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. For Carrie Johnson, financial reporter for The Washington Post, and Daniel Gross, who writes the Money Box column on Slate.com. Carrie, let me stay with you for a minute, because you mentioned politicians of both parties, and we did hear liberal Democrat Chuck Schumer making this call. We know he gets a lot of donations from this industry, campaign donations, being a senator from New York. We're going to have him on the show Thursday. But would Senator Schumer be proposing special tax breaks for business? Is that consistent with his record?
Well, Senator Schumer certainly represents his constituency, among them major Wall Street investment banks. And there's no doubt that the investment community in New York contributes quite a lot to the city's economy and is crucial to job creation and job growth in the city. What was more surprising yesterday was that the new governor of the state, Eliot Spitzer, the former pioneering attorney general who cracked down on investment banking practices and other business scandals for the last 5 years, actually stood up with Senator Schumer and New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg to support many of the reforms called for. That was, in essence, surprising to some people who had followed his career, which he made, of course, on the backs, in part, of unruly and fraud-ridden business.
Dan, you want to add to that?
Well, I think this Spitzer, you know, his role now is definitely ironic in a way that, you know, Spitzer himself has not been a particularly ironic person. As the sort of chief executive of the state, he is now in a different role than he was as attorney general when he was the scourge of this industry. Now he is sort of now a promoter of it. If I could add, there is something that is the report, which anybody can read. It's up on the mayor's website. Is, you know, very intelligent, but there's also an element of absurdity to it, which is that they talk a lot about costs and how Sarbanes-Oxley and securities litigation imposes costs, and that makes it harder for American companies to compete. Nowhere in this report will you find mention of the fact that, say, Wall Street underwriters charge 7% to do an IPO in New York, whereas in London, underwriters charge 3.5%. So you raise $100 million on the stock exchange in the U.S., you pay $7.5 million. You do that in London, you pay $3.5 million. It's
so
twice as expensive. That has nothing to do with Sarbanes-Oxley and everything to do with the salaries of investment bankers. If you take a look at the salaries of the people who run the exchanges, New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, they're off the charts compared to the compensation of the people at the Hong Kong Stock Exchange and the London Stock Exchange. You know, we all remember Richard Grasso's $140 million compensation.
Right.
That
gets
filtered into the costs of trading and everything else. You will see no mention of that in this report.
But do salaries really drive prices? I tend to be a skeptic of that notion.
On Wall Street, compensation is 60% of revenues. That's basically their own. That's their own, pretty much their own. That is their raw material, their input.
But
that is what they spend money on.
Don't they set prices based on what the market will bear, and then distribute salaries based on that?
And now the market for securities offering is international, and just like every other U.S. worker has to compete with people in China or India or Europe who offer lower prices, the investment banks may find themselves. You know, they've essentially set the IPO price of 7%.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cartel. Mm-hmm. No one breaks that. Well, if you're a Russian company and you're a Hong Kong company and you have a choice between paying 7% for your IPO and 3% on a domestic market, which, by the way, in China, you know, a lot of these government-controlled companies, they want to do their IPOs in Hong Kong and Shanghai for mercantilist reasons.
So you're saying they need to be more competitive, and that's not something for the government to do. That's something for the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, Wall Street has been very successful on telling the world to seek the, you know, its clients to seek the cheapest costs wherever they are around the globe. They're unwilling to apply that to themselves.
Richard in Fort Lee, you're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for your show.
Thank you.
I've been in finance all my life, and I've recently been to both Hong Kong and London, and the press in both of those cities is full of this issue. They feel that, and most statistics show, that they are gaining market share on New York in numerous ways, and whether that's through our IPO pricing, my own experience with two of the big firms was 6%, more than 7% higher than the prices that have been on those exchanges. I think we're losing our competitive edge, and I think part of it is compensation.
And, Richard, how much of it do you think is regulation?
I think regulation has perhaps pushed this past some tipping point where it's a very, very serious issue. I don't think regulation has been the cause of it, just one of many causes.
And what about taxation?
Well, taxation is always an issue. We've been a tax business tax-friendly country most of our country's lifetime, and that's not necessarily the case now.
Carrie, do you want to react to Richard, who works in the field?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that many overseas companies are bothered by U.S. regulation and, even more importantly, the litigation system here. But the factor to which a lot of these reports are pointing, which is that regulations in Sarbanes-Oxley are causing companies to list overseas, minimizes the point. I mean, Richard talked about, and Dan talked about as well, the high underwriting fees here in the U.S. And what hasn't been mentioned yet is that some studies have shown that this this trend to list overseas is 10 years in the making. Clearly, the economy is getting more global elsewhere, and there may be a competitiveness problem in the U.S., but Sarbanes-Oxley is not the sole cause or the root cause of those issues.
John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, John.
Hello. I just wanted to ask the people if they have any comment on the visa problem of foreigners getting visas, coming to the United States, foreign businessmen, or getting grilled by the State Department and objecting to that and just making it harder for the movement of people.
Yeah, this came up in the report, Dan Gross, didn't it, that they want to make it easier for desirable foreign workers to be able to come to this country?
There are two levels at which this operates. One is the ability to attract labor. As you said, for Wall Street, it's all about the people, you know, hiring the best traders, the people who can do algorithmic trades, et cetera. So,
and there aren't enough Americans?
Exactly. It's a global talent pool, and so if you are a European person and you're really good at this, you have a choice as to where you can go. So to the extent that there are visa issues or issues about getting, you know, work permits in the U.S. that you might not face in Europe, where there is, you know, among the European Union a freer flow of the ability to work across borders, that's one issue. A second is if you come from a country where or a sector of the world where the U.S. has sort of cracked down on visas, say the Middle East or perhaps Asia. That's a second issue. And a second class of issues has to do with the executives themselves. You know, we have these, say you're a Russian oil company and you're raising money. Well, is it more congenial for you to hop on your plane and be in London in 2 or 3 hours and deal with people in the same time zone, or more congenial to go to the U.S. And have a 9 or 10 hour trip and maybe get some hassles at immigration?
We're going to run out of time in 2 minutes, and I want to make sure to get this idea of a tax-free international business zone in New York into this. Carrie Johnson from The Washington Post, do you understand what that is?
Well, it's not entirely clear to me how they're going to make that come about, but the point I would make coming from Washington is that a lot of the Democrats on this issue or on these sets of issues are more open to negotiating with business. Clearly, Senator Schumer and Barney Frank from Massachusetts, who is the new head of the House Financial Services Panel, has indicated some interest in entering into a grand bargain with business, so long as business compromises on issues of minimum wage and income inequality. They may be more willing, these Democrats, to negotiate in terms of taxes, trade, and other issues.
And I may have overstated. I think I said tax-free international zone. I think it would be lower tax than other New York businesses pay. But Dan Gross, do you understand that part of the proposal?
I haven't looked at it in great detail, but I think set against the backdrop of these huge trends which are pushing this, I don't think it will make much of a difference. The U.S. is not simply losing market share in financial services. It's losing market share in the global economy. China and India are growing at rates 2 and 3 times what the U.S. is growing at. And this has been our great export to the world. We have exported market capitalism to places that were closed economies 20-something years ago. So they're accounting for a greater chunk of the global economic pie. We are going to be accounting for less of it. And it only makes sense that they will be raising capital locally, and having their own stock exchanges and having their own mutual funds. And
so,
so
to what extent, in our last 30 seconds, do you think it's inevitable that New York loses its place as a financial capital of the world, or even a financial capital of the world in the next 10 or 20 years?
Well, I think that it loses its place as the financial capital of the world. It probably already has. You're seeing capital is being is much more diffused. There's now big centers in Dubai because of all the petrodollars. There are now emerging centers of India, in Japan, in China. So you're going to have a kind of multipolar world where there will be lots of centers. Capital seeks efficiency and therefore likes to travel as little as possible.
And Kerry Johnson, 10 seconds, you think all this talk about taxation and regulation doesn't do much to change that?
I couldn't agree more with Dan. I think that we're talking about items around the issue rather than the issue itself.
Kerry Johnson is a financial reporter for The Washington Post. Daniel Gross writes the Money Box column on Slate.com. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.